For thousands of years, a cluster of wooden canoes has lain dormant under Madison's Lake Mendota.
Now, thanks to the work of Wisconsin scientists, those ancient vessels are starting to reveal their secrets, WPR's Sarah Lear reports.
The USDA's Forest Products Lab is a big, brutalist building in an industrial area of Madison. That's where I meet Michael Wyman, where he works inside a small room stuffed with reference books and lab equipment.
Okay. So, where shall we start?
Wyman is a botanist by trade. He specializes in the anatomy, identification, and properties of tropical woods. He's into this work, and he has been for a long time.
When I was in kindergarten, my favorite toys were wood blocks. 7 decades later, what am I doing? I'm playing with wood blocks.
For the past several years, Wyman has had a special assignment. He's been helping archaeologists identify samples from ancient canoes. That includes 16 boats, all of which were discovered from the same section of Madison's Lake Mendota. And this was no easy task.
It's a hard problem to get a decent sample because Lake Mendota is not clear.
Researchers believe the canoes were made during a period of drought, when Lake Mendota was shallower than it is today. One theory is that indigenous people stashed their boats over the winter by sticking them in the side of the lake bed. After being buried underwater in sediment, they were lost to history. That's until maritime archaeologist Tamara Thompson glimpsed what turned out to be part of a 1,200-year-old canoe while out diving in 2021. Since then, Thompson has returned to the same section of the lake and found 15 more ancient canoes, some of which are in pieces. It's a mission that she holds sacred.
We also hear from our tribal partners that the canoes are showing themselves because they want their stories to be told.
One of the boats in the cache is more than 5,000 years old, making it one of the oldest canoes ever discovered in North America. Bill Quackenbush, the historical preservation officer for the Ho-Chunk Nation, says the canoes tell a story about the continued presence of Native peoples.
Time and time again, we would build dugout canoes and bring ourselves back over here, or else I wouldn't even be here.
The canoes still have more stories to tell, and Wyman and other experts are working to fill in the missing pieces. Typically, archaeologists send Wyman a wooden sliver from one of the vessels. A different laboratory checks the boat's age with radiocarbon dating. Wyman's job is to figure out what type of tree the canoe is made from. He does that by sectioning the wood with a razor blade and looking for patterns under a microscope.
In this case, the vessels are two sizes, and they're in like lines, wavy lines that the vessels are joined. And that's a very distinctive feature for elm.
Elm is a difficult wood to work with, even with modern tools, says Cecil Schrader, a University of Wisconsin anthropologist who's been studying the canoes. Lake Mendota's ancient canoes are made from other species too, like oak, ash, basswood, and cottonwood. For millennia, Schrader says indigenous people made dugout canoes by knocking down trees and then hollowing them out with fire, shells, and stone tools.
Indigenous peoples were using the types of trees that were readily available.
Schrader says those species tell a story about how the climate in South Central Wisconsin has changed. For Wyman, identifying that species can take anywhere from 5 minutes to 3 days. It can be tedious, but he likes this work.
That's what makes it fun. It's a big puzzle, and once you get all the information, it starts making sense.
This spring, Thompson will try to fill in more pieces of that puzzle. She'll follow a tip left by the State Historical Society director more than a century ago. In 1909, he wrote about a cluster of canoes believed to be buried in Madison's Lake Wingra, just south of the lake where Thompson discovered the other canoes. Thompson plans to go diving in Wingra later this month. She hopes the water will be clear enough to reveal even more ancient secrets. Sarah Lear, Wisconsin Public Radio.
This is WPR News.
More than 50 years ago, Northland College in Ashland founded the Sigurd Olson Environmental Institute to spearhead environmental conservation and education efforts in the Lake Superior region.
The Institute has launched citizen scientist projects to encourage loon and wolf conservation and created an annual Nature Writing Award. But with the closing of Northland College last year, the Institute faces an uncertain future.
A group of volunteers are working to transform the Institute into an independent nonprofit and keep it going as part of the college's legacy. Terry Dalton is vice chair of the Sigurd Olson Environmental Institute, and Rocky Barker is a retired journalist and author who's the Institute's treasurer. I talked to them earlier this week. Rocky, let's start with you. I understand you were a student at Northland when the Institute was founded. You knew Sigurd Olson. Can you tell us a little bit about the early days of the Institute?
So, you know, I get to Northland as a freshman in August of 1971, and I arrive on campus and I look over at the student union, and there's all these people in suits. And it turns out it's Gaylord Nelson, it's Dave Obey, it's Malcolm McLean, and people who started the Institute. And at lunch, they sat down, actually came up with the idea of setting up the Sigurd Olson Institute. So the next year, 72, I was made a member of the Student Faculty Advisory Committee. So I really was involved right from the beginning.
And what in those early days, Rocky, was the goal? What was the hope for what this institute would do?
Well, the idea of the institute was to basically design to provide the area environmental wisdom, environmental activity. The thing that they started with was to do these problem-solving workshops. And they reached out in all the small communities of bringing people who knew a lot about planning and about wildlife and fish. And that helped the communities deal with some of the problems that they were facing at the time. And it also was, you know, pushing ideas. Remember, this is a year after Earth Day, and we're passing all kinds of laws, the Clean Water Act, the Clean Air Act, the Endangered Species Act. And so we were helping Northern Wisconsin to address these problems that now were being addressed on the federal level.
And now, Terry, the Institute grew out of Northland College. As Rocky said, Northland has closed its doors now. Why is it important for the state as a whole, do you think, for this institute to carry on that mission?
Well, the Sigurd Olson Environmental Institute has always had sort of a special niche where we looked at the Northwoods and the greater Lake Superior region and tried to focus on things that mattered to the people in that region. Also, in some ways, it was a bit like University Extension for Northland College, but we were also reaching out with a message about what were the spiritual connections, what were the emotional connections, what is it that sustains those cultures around this region, around the natural resources and cultural issues. So we tried to take what Northland had, which was a liberal arts environmental message, and infuse that into the communities. What does it mean when you're not just looking at the science, but looking at everything across the community from philosophy, religion, the social sciences? How do we react to the environment around us and bring that all together? So we're looking at a whole in that regional context.
And Terry, what did that look like in practice where it was, of course, Northland students themselves were part of this? What did it look like when you were bringing this to the community beyond the school?
Well, it changed over the years, but we had many different projects that cycled through. One of the ones that I worked with a lot was the Loon Watch program, which started as a citizen science program to document loon populations and habitat needs in the Lake Superior, at Northern Wisconsin and Lake Superior area. But we had other projects like the Timberwolf Alliance, like the Lake Superior Binational Forum. We started a number of sustainability initiatives in the Shawangan Bay area and beyond. So we really looked, as things changed over time, we looked at what were those issues as the communities grew and changed that we could help address.
We're talking about the future of the Sigurd Olson Environmental Institute after the closure of Northland College. We have Terry Dalton with us, vice chair of the Institute, Rocky Barker, treasurer, a longtime connection, as we heard, to the Institute. Let's look toward the future now, Rocky. Northland College, I understand, seeking to turn over about $1 million of its endowment to help keep that institute going. Where are you in this process of figuring out the funding for the Institute?
Well, that is in court right now. So at the moment, we really don't have any control over that. And so what we're doing is we're trying to reach out to the community and do basic fundraising. you know, that money is a part of an endowment. We hope to keep it as an endowment. And that means we'll still need considerable money for the year-to-year, day-to-day operations. And so that's kind of what we're working on at the moment and managing the programs that we are still doing.
Terry, as this outreach is going on, what has been the response from the community? Do you see a desire, a drive to keep the Sigurd Olson Institute around?
We've heard nothing but thanks from people who have been active in the past and people in the area. I think people will be interested in what the mission of the organization is moving forward. I think we actually are in a unique situation to take a look at the Sigurd Olson Institute over the last 50 or so years, and then where do we want to go in the future? What does the philosophy and work of the Institute and of Sigurd Olson mean for next generations down the road? Things have changed over time since the 1970s, and I think we're uniquely positioned to help us guide the region and help us think about the most important issues as we move forward, whether it's climate change, sustainable populations, and our relationship to nature here in northern Wisconsin and beyond.
And Terry, you mentioned the Loon Watch, and I think people have birds on their mind this time of year. Tell us a little bit about this citizen science project. How do people participate?
Well, Loon Watch started in 1978, shortly after the Institute was founded. And at that time, we didn't have a lot of information on loons in the state. Loons are kind of an interesting species because they fall between categories that most natural resource agencies deal with. They're not a game species, nor are they threatened or endangered in Wisconsin. So no one was really tracking them or monitoring them. Yet when you think about it, loons are an icon of the North Woods. Very important to our experiences in Northern Lakes, to how we feel about those places that we connect to, whether it's on vacation or for second homes or year-round homeowners. So we started this program to first try to document where loons were living and nesting, what were their habitat needs, and we've been doing that for almost 50 years. It's one of the oldest citizen science programs in Wisconsin, and we're still an important database that the DNR and other organizations come to when they're looking at management options on lakes, when they're looking at water quality. Loons are, in some ways, an indicator species for lake health. They require clear, clean water, healthy fish populations, and a relative level of space and tranquility to pull off nesting and having chicks.
Rocky, I want to hear a little bit more about Sigurd Olson, a very lifelong connection with Wisconsin and northern Wisconsin in particular. You overlapped with him, as you mentioned, in your time at Northland. Can you tell us a little bit about Sigurd Olson?
What was really interesting for me as a young student was he spoke directly to us when he'd speak at Northland. He was talking about a new generation that was going to, in new jobs that weren't even created then. Well, you know, he was, so he was thinking, you know, 50 years ahead at that time. And, you know, one of the things he was, of all of the environmental leaders at that time, he was really one of the most connected to his spiritual side. And that was a really important factor in his life and the importance of wildness in all of our lives. And I think that's kind of what, you know, I was, when I got to speak with him, you know, he talked about even down in Sealy where his wife Elizabeth was from, that feeling that he had being out in the woods.
And briefly, as we wrap up, Terry, kind of a pulse check. How positive do you feel that, yes, indeed, the Sigurd Olson Environmental Institute will carry on Sigurd's mission into the future?
Oh, I think one way or the other, we're going to carry on. We already have our Loon Rangers out working on lakes. Timberwolf Alliance is active and moving programs forward. And there's a lot of enthusiasm. And we have a great board and volunteers that have stepped up. So folks who are interested should drop us an email or visit our website, Sigurd Olson Environmental Institute.org. And we're starting to get good lists of folks who want to help and hoping to bring more people in as we develop more capacity.
We'll leave it there. Terry, thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for having us.
And Rocky, thanks for being with us.
It's my pleasure. And stay tuned for the Sigurd Olson Nature Writing Awards are going to come out pretty soon.
That was Terry Dalton, Vice Chair of the Sigurd Olson Environmental Institute, and Rocky Barker, graduate of Northland College and the Institute's treasurer, been talking about their efforts to keep the Institute up and running after the closure of Northland College.